And welcome to the No Assembly Required podcast, a podcast where we talk about nothing. Please join us around 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time-ish for the show, filmed in front of a live YouTube audience. And now your trio of hosts, starting with Audrey Burn It All Down, Ember, Red Romina, the Teenage Witch, and of course, your Dark Lord of the Interwebs, your favorite Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher, Roberto Blake. Welcome to the No Assembly Required podcast, filmed in front of a live YouTube audience. Please subscribe.
Why am I a witch?
Well, you started burning candles, and Sabrina just got its final season on Netflix, so I went with that.
How many seasons has it had? Three?
Three, so now it's four. It's actually pretty good. Chilling Adventures of Sabrina is actually pretty good.
See, I couldn't get into it. Like,
it's quality content.
I watched the first couple episodes, and it seemed like it was
a
little...
slow burn.
Is that a pun?
Yes.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I kind of like this candle. It lights up, my face pretty good. Which is a little surprising because you usually don't get that from candles. But
wow.
All right, guys, it's a slow start here today on No Assembly Required podcast.
you know what we about.
Everybody's got other stuff going on. I think Roberto's on his phone.
I'm just checking something real quick.
Should we make like a PSA that we're
in
not going to talk about?
Oh yeah, we're not going to talk about the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
I mean, at least I'm not. I will log off in that instance because I do not want to talk about it. Mm. Plus, I'm here to hang out with you guys and have fun.
Understandable.
Oh, look at that. I heard Mr. Beast would be here.
Yep.
Womp womp.
Yeah, he'll be here later. Just you have to wait until the very end. Until the outro. Wait until the outro.
Uh-huh. Right.
And there will be a big surprise there.
Yeah. Sure. Wink. Uh-huh. Right. promises.
What, guys? I mean, you know, it's not like I was lying. The video.
We just have to bring him up now, so it's not clickbait.
Right. Well, I mean, it wasn't meant to be.
Literally, do that.
Yeah, it just happened right now.
Do you know how disappointed someone would be if they clicked on this video and that's the only thing we mention him in is the fact that we're not gonna have him in the video?
That seems like their fault.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Does the title of this episode say Mr. Beast is going to be in this episode, featuring Mr. Beast?
No, but like,
no.
We could talk about it a little. I don't know.
We are going to talk about it. It's called Getting Mr. Beast to Collab with You. And the whole reason that we're talking about that is because last episode we started talking about collabing and getting people to collab and how some people think that it's like a huge deal to collab with someone as big as Mr. Beast, or they strive to collab with people like that and don't know how to approach it. They don't know how to collaborate with established creators on YouTube.
I also think that people have really naive expectations that they put on that and what's supposed to happen from it. And they put project those naive expectations on the audience with no respect for what the audience actually gives a crap about and why they would do something or why they wouldn't do something. And I think it's effing stupid. And I'm sorry if that sounds insulting or dismissive to small YouTubers, but like, if you think that doing a collab with somebody with millions or tens of millions of subscribers is going to blow up your channel or should blow up your channel, then you're in the wrong freaking deal. You're in the wrong business. You're in the wrong platform if you're that naive.
You have something.
That's harsh. I know that's dark and it sounds condescending. It sounds arrogant, but I'm like, no, I'm telling you how it is. It's like you are naive if you believe that. It's incredibly naive.
Yeah, I think having some kind of value that you provide, not only to your own channel, but to their channel and to their audience. And that's really what it's about. It's about figuring out, and it doesn't even have to come in the form of like an exchange of videos. It could even be something that happens behind the scenes, you know? I mean, there's different ways to go about it.
Yeah. But here's the truth. We know that the truth, aside from like hero worship or like, here's the thing. I don't believe that most people would collab or hang out with a big YouTuber and be 100% okay with never talking about it and never taking like they can't publish a selfie. It's like, oh, we can hang out or we can do this or you can even be my homie, but you can never post about it and you can never shout out or claim it, or you can have a direct relationship with me and I have like 10 million subscribers or whatever, but you can never use me for clout. That's the deal. People wouldn't, I don't believe people would do that. I don't believe it, but I'm being cynical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a certain, like, people.
I'm being cynical that people would not use a big YouTuber for clout if they are, right. If they are like a channel with like no audience or they're like a rookie. Because there's exceptions to that rule that we know personally, people like that. I just don't believe 99.9% of people would not use access to a big Uber for YouTuber for clout. If they had to never put that person's name in their mouth, they wouldn't do stuff and be hanging out with them and wouldn't do stuff.
I want to believe that it isn't true, but it is. and I think I even mentioned it last time, where there was that one guy who kept wanting to collab with me. And then he saw that I had collabed with someone who had, over 1 million subscribers. And at the time I only had maybe like 3,000 subscribers or something like that. And he ran into me at some YouTube event and he's like, oh, how'd you manage to collaborate with so-and-so? And I was like, manage? You mean like just like call them up and ask them if they wanted to do a video together? Like,
I have a friend who, like, people and even brands have tried to like use her to get to one or two people in her network that are mega, mega YouTubers. Like, and it kind of pisses me off on her behalf that, like, literally that. Not only, because it's one thing, it's just as bad, but it's one thing when it's a creator, but when it's literally a company that wants to use you for clout, not because of how talented you are or acknowledge you, but they want to pretend like they do just to get to your friend that's more famous, that's messed up.
Mm-hmm.
And finding out about that, I'm like, oh, that company did that to you? Oh, they're dead to me. So, yeah.
Nope. That sucks.
Yeah, no, I kind of take some of that. Like, when people do stuff like that to my friends, I take it personally.
I feel like there's a lot of that happens, though. Even just on the casual end, like on Twitter, sometimes I'll get DMs from people. Here, this is relevant. They'll be like, can you ask Mr. Beast for like $10,000 for me?
Oh, that happens to me every week.
And I'm just like, no. What the hell? I just,
because he like follows you, right?
Yeah, I'm just like, why would I do? And they sent like a really sad story, and I feel
it's
like
always a sad
it's
story.
Always a scam, probably.
And it's just almost always a. You know, the reality is that having been in a position where I was like poor before, like people who are going through. Oftentimes it's not impossible, and the culture has changed, so it depends, but most people hide their hardship out of a sense of shame and out of a sense of pride and out of a sense of not wanting to be looked down on.
Yeah.
So when people like, what's the phrase they use? And I'm not like, if you're going through genuine hardship, don't not ask for help.
Yeah,
I'm specifically talking more about people who may be grifting. The phrase that I think I've heard people use before is, isn't it like e-begging or something like that is what they're calling it?
I've never heard that before.
Romina, you've heard of that, right?
No.
E-begging, yeah. So like begging, but it's electronic begging, like email, it's e-begging.
Wow.
That's the, that's the new slang.
It's great though.
That's the new slang. That's the vernacular.
It's kind of sad because if there was someone serious, like you wouldn't be able to know because there's so many.
That's the that's what makes it bad is like when you have any situation like that, people who have genuine problems or genuine victims or hardship or whatever, there's no way to tell it apart anymore because a few people decided to ruin it or to grift or to fake it or to, you know.
Yeah.
Metal says that would be a good video for him to do. Give anybody who asks me for money, money.
No, it wouldn't be a good video to do.
That could turn sideways real fast.
It's a joke. It's a joke, Roberto. Yeah.
Imagine.
It's 2020. I can't tell what's a joke anymore. 2020 is a joke.
I mean, maybe. That would like, I feel like that video would just never have an ending, right? Because it would just be like,
he better have a budget cap or something.
Yeah, it would be like a constant flow of like him going into his DMs or email, and it would just it would never end, right?
Yeah.
Because I feel like if we get stuff like that, I mean, do you guys ever get people asking you for gear or things
laptops and cameras?
It's like people assume that just because we've made a video about it that we're just gonna that we don't need it or that we're like gonna throw it away or something.
Or that we don't want it or that we don't have an attachment to it or that there's not a practical reason to keep. Well, you have so many and I have nothing. I hate that attitude. Well, you have so much and I have so little. That is literally stupid. That is a stupid justification. That is a stupid justification for anything. And I know that not everyone agrees with that, but that is a stupid justification for anything. To like,
I mean, it's just really out of nowhere to like message someone you don't know and be like, "Hey, I'm assuming you're not going to use your old gear. Can you give it to me?
Let me when I'm 50 years old. Oh, you have so much youth and I don't. So let me just take that from you. Like,
so much youth."
Yeah, you have so much youth. Let me just get some of that. Yeah. Yes, the Emperor is reborn. Yeah.
I think that's what Keanu Reeves does, right?
Yeah, just how siphon else is the he youth looking? From the undeserving. Yeah.
And Tom Cruise.
Yeah, let me just siphon all of this youth and health and strength from the undeserving.
They're just like perpetually 45.
Forever.
Just
forever. Maybe they're vampires.
Forever 45.
They might be vampires.
Mm. Oh no, they definitely are. They definitely are.
I'm glad we've confirmed this.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
This is a fact.
Facts. Yeah.
It is a fact.
This is not fake news.
Look at the photo right here, guys.
Look at the photo. There's photos. There's photographic evidence.
Of them not in the sun.
No, of them like in the 18th century. Oh. Like old photos of them.
Mm.
Nice. If not vampires, at least immortal. Immortals.
Mm. Betty White's immortal.
Has she ever been young? She just like became immortal at the age of 80.
That seems
that's how they screw you on the immortality, you know? It's like, yeah.
Right, depending on when you sign your contract.
She forgot to ask for eternal. She forgot to ask eternal youth, not eternal life. Eternal youth,
right? Honestly, being 80 forever and having like no health problems sounds like it could be a fun time.
I would want my strength and stamina.
Yeah,
and also not a bad back.
I'm like, you know,
and all of my teeth.
Yeah. You know what? I have to go win Mortal Kombat again. Excuse me. You know, to preserve
maybe
my
in the
youth
future, it won't
for
matter
like another 100 years.
You can just upgrade her like spine or whatever.
Cyborg Roberto will just give me his give me that freaking carbon fiber skeleton or that adamantium. Yeah, giggity. Indestructible.
Wait, how did we get here from whatever? Collab.
Because we talked about people like we escalated it because of the Mr. Beast thing to the giving, which then escalated to the e-begging, to which then escalated to the people trying
play to, by play
to get at us for stuff, which then escalated to
like me saying,
"Oh well, you know, you want me to just give you that because you have." It's like, all right, well, let me get some of that youth. What's up with those? Like, you know what? It's like you got all that youth, you got all that strength and stamina. Let me just get that. Like,
okay, wait, I've got a question.
You got an abundance to give me.
All right, ask his.
I've got a
question.
It's not really a question. It's not just for me. I'm thinking about audience here. How would you go about collabing with someone that you've never met? And like, who would you be reaching out to and stuff like that? Like, what boxes do you have to take before you try and like collab with someone?
You'd have to know what actually they're really excited about, or you'd have to provide them an outlet to do something that they are into that their audience doesn't necessarily sign on for, but your audience does, and that they can actually be part of.
Yeah.
Or create an amazing experience for them. Primary example, let's use Mr. Beast for example. None of us really do challenge videos with our content, although Romina should be doing challenge videos. Like,
I will be doing challenge videos. It's a secret channel that's happening.
Yeah.
Another one.
Yeah. Romina's in a race to have more YouTube channels than me. We're having a cold war. The
your multiple channels.
Yeah, yeah. So so yeah, so that's happening.
Hey, you know what they say? You gotta play the lotto every day if you want to win.
Oh my god!
That's no, really you throw that money into Apple stock and then you win. Anyway, Mr. Beast like can create these experiences that may not be something that the YouTuber who participates in them would successfully do on their channel. Primary example, Odwin's out, Jaden Animations, and another, who was the other, you maybe like who was the other animation YouTuber? Anyway, it was a trio of animation YouTubers that won Mr. Beast paintball free for all, his paintball tournament. They're animation channels. They wouldn't normally get to do that for their audience. They got to participate in a really dope experience collaborating with other creators and having an experience and everything, going out and playing paintball, and they got to win money doing it. And that was like really dope and not something that they would ever do.
That's kind of an extreme example.
but I'm making a point and everything. Here's the, like, it wouldn't fit their content. It would not fit their content, but it fits Mr. Beast content, and it lets them also collaborate and participate with creators that are completely out of their niche and have other creator friends now and like hang out with and eat and drink with afterward or before and all that good stuff. I mean, here would be another example. I keep pitching him. COVID's probably the reason that we couldn't do it, but I know for a fact that, and this goes back to knowing what someone's excited about. I know for a fact that back before, I think, Mr. Beast is a big anime fan, like a big hardcore weeb like me, you know, super straight up. And so we were like, I actually got him onto a couple of Crunchyroll anime while we were at Vid Summit last year, because like he didn't know about Overlord or Rise of the Shield Hero. I was like, oh, you'd love these. But he when he was a kid really liked Yu-Gi-Oh! The embarrassing story his mom tells for his 10,000 subscriber milestone is that there was this one time when he did something bad that he had to be punished for. He was grounded for like 2 months or something. Is that he swiped the change off of his teacher's desk and used it to buy Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards. Like he stole like $5 in change or something like that off of a teacher's desk to go buy Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards. Because back then, before he was obsessed with YouTube, he was obsessed with Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards. This was something like in the fourth grade or something like that. So this is like a childhood indiscretion story. And the thing is, I was like, okay, get a bunch of YouTubers. They don't even have to be anime YouTubers, but a lot of them could be, or they could be just be YouTubers that are into anime, and stage a YouTuber Yu-Gi-Oh tournament in real life, Mr. Beast, like with the whole dual disc on your arm kind of thing and everything like that. Straight up, like lock down like a whole block for it. Make Battle City for real, like in the anime, but it's YouTubers, like Yu-Gi-Oh in real life for YouTubers. And there's this big Yu-Gi-Oh! Channel team, APS. They're like almost, they're one of the only, they're like, there's only a handful of successful, in terms of large numbers, black anime YouTubers. And there's only a handful that are Yu-Gi-Oh! Channels. And like Team APS is like the biggest. And I like, really love them, and I've been a big supporter of theirs for a while before they ever got to like 100,000. And I like tagged them in it, and like a lot of people were supporting this and were like for it. And I also tagged RDC World One. You know, you guys might know them for their viral content, because they make they're another group of friends who make viral content. And the thing is, I also tagged them as like groups of people, because what does Mr. Beast do? He made it, his YouTube channel revolve around his best childhood friends. Well, these are channels where a bunch of childhood friends got together and became YouTube creators. So you see how knowing and understanding. Now, granted, none of this has manifested into a collab, but a lot of people would have loved this. Like, but it probably would happen if COVID wasn't a thing. But I made a point of like, I know something about Mr. Beast as a human being, multiple things about him that he would be passionate about that all work together. I know content creators who have a similar background and story and have a fit for that, that he may not even be aware of or have connected with before. And this would be, even if I couldn't, even if I didn't participate in it, which I would love to, because I, you know me, it's like, I'm sitting here, Mr. Blue Eyes White Dragon deck. But you see what I'm getting at? Think about it. The whole Logan Paul thing. Look about all the YouTubers and all the celebrities who got in on Logan Paul's Pokemon unboxing. Like his pack opening. You see what I'm saying? You just have to know, what do people care about? What makes sense for their content? What would be exciting for the audience? And what would be a win for everybody?
Yeah. I think... there's a couple of people in the chat that I wanted to mention. So Otto says, you know, being their friend is a bonus, but even just being in their loop works well, which is kind of what you were talking about, Roberto, is common interests and just overall being in the in their radar, which, again, it might not lead to a direct collab, but it could lead to other collabs and then eventually a collab. So really all, it's not... like going into it with like this agenda is kind of it can be a little counterproductive, so you have to be a little bit careful with that kind of thing. Another thing that Michael in the chat noticed suggested was he uses a lot of apps like Shaper and Bumble Biz and social media, and so he connects
with people. They're kind of like the Bumble of collabs,
right? And so Tinder just creates a creates a sense of reliability for what he's trying to do. And then, you know, he'll just ask them to collaborate with them. So, I mean, again, I think it's coming off as someone who it's, that's not your only agenda is to collab. Unless they're very open about that kind of thing. Because some creators are, and they'll be very public about it. They'll say, hey, if you want to collab, here's like a form. Give me your idea and we'll collab, you know? But for the most part, collaborators just want to have, I mean, creators just want to collab with people that they get along with or people that their friends get along with and just
people that they know, like, and trust.
People, yeah. And that can be reliable. Yeah. You know, I think you have to show that you can be reliable in some capacity. And, you know, if you have like a channel that has 500 videos and they all look pretty decent, then the chances of like me saying yes to a collab to that is probably high if it fits, even if we don't know each other that well, you know? So it just depends on, there's like a lot of different factors that go into it. But I think sometimes people do get scared about the numbers and just like approaching someone who has bigger numbers than them. And then on the flip side, creators that have bigger numbers sometimes don't want to collaborate with someone who has smaller numbers because they don't see the value in it.
Well, it's not just they don't see the value. It's that like
But
one of the things is,
I feel like you have to be a little picky.
Mm-hmm. There's a reason to be picky at that point because there's usually people, like, it's very rare that somebody with that, because you just wouldn't necessarily run in the same circles, it's very rare that you would know that person very well. And again, it's hard to trust that that person isn't just using you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, it just makes sense. It's not about right. elitism. It's not about a caste system. I mean, it's like, you guys know that I'm, like, really close with a lot of people that don't even have 10,000 subscribers. You know,
right.
I like Aubrey, we've been friends, Audrey, since before you had what, even 5,000, like something like that. Like,
I don't know. I think,
Romina,
so.
I don't think I even knew how many subscribers you did or didn't have when we started hanging out.
No, I had at least 20,000.
Yeah. I don't even think I knew.
I don't know how many you had.
Yeah.
I don't know how many you had either.
I knew it was probably over 100K just because of the timing of when I moved to Atlanta.
I just wanted friends.
Yeah. No, I got it. Like, no, I mean, I was new to the state, you know, like, of course I just want friends. Like,
yeah.
But what I'm getting at is our friendship didn't begin even, I don't think, with YouTube or YouTube in mind or even doing anything. Like, I mean, think about it like this.
It wasn't a business transaction.
It wasn't, right. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. think about it like this. The three of us have been doing, how many episodes are we up to?
38?
Whoa.
We're almost to 40 episodes. Everybody, like, everyone roll off what you think your subscriber count is right now.
My subscriber count?
Yeah, all of us. Just because I'm going to make a point. I'm going to use this as a teachable moment.
I don't know. I think I might have 28,000. 20. I don't know, actually. I haven't looked.
I'm at like 27.
You're at like 27?
Yeah.
So I'm probably the same as you, Audrey.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, you guys probably. Are like, well, like, I mean, Audrey on the come up. Like, Audrey Emba on the come up.
I haven't made a video in forever. Okay, yeah, I'm almost 29.
All right, you're almost 29.
28.9, so.
I'm at, because I have the counter in front of my desk, I'm at 487,000 subscribers, almost at 500,000 subscribers. We have been doing, like, a podcast together, and I think when we started this podcast, you might have had, like, what, 15K, Audrey?
Yeah.
I think she did.
I don't know that anybody would believe if they weren't seeing it with their own eyes that somebody who like had 400K, someone with 15K, and someone with like 25K would have been doing a podcast together for almost a year. Like, for what they believe about YouTube. I'm saying for what most small YouTubers.
That's really unusual.
When small YouTubers tell us it's not as unusual as people think. Marquez has been on Viper's channel 10 freaking times. Marquez has been on Viper's channel 10 freaking times. I've been on Viper's channel like when he was doing stuff. I was on Viper's channel almost every week for like a year.
Yeah, that's so true.
I was on Viper's channel almost more than he was.
But also, is this like, because I'm kind of stuck in our like community of tech / like creative filmmaker, whatever you want to call that.
Mm-hmm.
So is it like, I don't really see that happening as much in like the entertainment side of things.
So I could see where like with me as an education channel, it's probably not as weird for me to have so many friends with in one different niches. Cause I have friends in every niche of YouTube. So I'm in no kind of bubble and of every age group in YouTube and of every subscriber level of YouTube, right? So that's different. But if you like a bridge for both of you, for example, would be you guys could have friends in completely different genres and niches of YouTube based on something like being female creators in the same way that I have a lot of friends that specifically one of our things is like, hey, I have a lot of friends who I'll just say it. Like I have a lot of friends that we have, our content would have nothing in common, but we're all Black creators. And I'm not saying that that has to be in and of itself a thing, but I'm making a point that some level of commonality, some common denominator can get you out of your bubble when it comes to the niche of your channel. There's always something else. Like, again, even if Mr. Beast and I weren't at like Vid Summit together and met there, there's a lot of other things we would have potentially been able to talk about or bond over for the fact that one, we both are YouTubers who also love anime. We both are YouTubers who are also obsessed with the algorithm. We both have common friends. We have Daryl Leaves is a very good friend of both of ours, you know, and a mentor of both of ours.
I think, hold on, before the chat gets too crazy, there's a few messages back. Otto asked a question saying, how early is doing collabs okay? So, like, he says, I know I'm an established creator, but I still could use a bit more time to formalize my content strategy. And but then again, collabs might spark inspiration for more solo video. So my take on that, I'll just say what my experience is, and then maybe you guys can weigh in on that. For me, I mean, I've been on YouTube for a really long time, but my one channel when I first started it, and I did it in with a very business mindset, and I had a strategy set up for it. I started collabing immediately as soon as I could. I made a few videos to establish the tone of my channel and the kind of videos that I would be doing, and to kind of get into the rhythm of things. But as soon as I could do my first collab, I did it, and that was just like it, to me, it was about getting more acquainted with the community, making more friends, making getting more acquainted with creators, and so to me, collaborations helped immensely for me to grow. I mean, just from the first 3,000 subscribers that I got, like half of them came from one collab that I did.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, and that That's was like uncommon. Early on. That was before, like, I did any of my big trips. It was like very, very early on. So
most
I think
people make their milestones off the back of like one video.
And that was, and it was a collab. So I feel like to me, but I don't know, if you feel like you aren't ready, like you don't have an established, you know, form for video or something, that might throw someone off if you ask them to collaborate with you.
It also might mean you get stuck with something. If that video does take off, then that's what you become known for. Then it's hard to do other things.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of useless, in my opinion, if you go viral on something that's unrelated to what your channel's about.
Oh, it destroys entire
careers. No one's going to watch any of your stuff. And it's not
the worst thing. Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
No, that was the end of the sentence.
The worst thing that can happen to you is to go viral for something that's completely unsustainable and that you can't replicate, or that you would rather not be known for.
Right, which happened to me in my old channel, not the Red Romina channel, but the channel that I had before that. I had a video that did go viral, and it was me, like, it was a very random video because there happened to be a limousine, like a Hummer limousine, that was parked right outside of my house. And so I started vlogging about it. Like, I got out of the shower, like, my hair was wet. I was so unprepared. And I just started vlogging it, and I was like, I don't know what's going on here. And then the guy comes out of the limousine, and he's like, hey, do you want to come inside and check it out on the inside? And I was like, yeah, of course. And so I went in.
And wait, what? I thought you were going to say no.
No, of course I said yes. And so I went in, and I filmed the inside of it. And so I made this whole video, and he's like, oh, okay, cool. And so I sent him the video and stuff, and I, like, that video got a lot of views. Like, this channel was nothing. I wasn't using it for making videos or anything. So I had a video that went viral that was not anything that I could replicate.
Duplicate. Yeah.
You could do like luxury car tour.
Yeah, but I wasn't gonna do that on my official channel. It was like a personal.
you just shift completely into only doing that for the rest of your
life. But she also had no expectation of that blowing up or doing anything.
Yeah.
Right. It wasn't something that I had planned.
I had a friend who basically planned their viral moment, but they planned their back catalog for that viral moment because the viral moment was supposed to get traction for their passion project. And so they did that, and then they got this huge shout out and blew up virtually overnight through 4 years of experimentation. I say overnight, it's like, oh, you'd been a YouTuber for 4 years. You got to 4,000 subscribers. You did all this high-end stuff. You made an entire back catalog of high production content so that when people check out your stuff, that's what they'll see on the back of this viral video that engineered. And then she immediately knew the next three, if she blew up, that there were three emails she needed to write, reaching out to three different people to keep momentum off of the back of that. And went to like over 100K off of that plan and that strategy. And then immediately she kind of lined up like 10 very intentional collabs that would be the beginnings of the foundation of a very successful YouTube career over the next 4 years. And it was super, super smart. However, she also got into a place where for a while she got stuck in a rut and was hovering between like a certain like number and got stuck there. But then, you know, upon some very sage advice, went back to her roots and also started making things that she could enjoy versus what she assumed people wanted from her, and realized that she'd cultivated an audience that actually had indeed fallen in love with her and wanted to see her do the authentic expression of herself. And so the net result was that in going back to like, you know, in trusting herself to make something that she would enjoy,
right,
and to trust the instincts of, she was smart enough to get here strategically, marry what you love to what they might want to watch based on not your assumptions and your insecurities, but based on what has cultivated real loyalty, people who always show up for you, the kind of people who will go to bat for you, that will make things happen for you, that will scream about you for the rooftops. And as they say, the rest is history and everything like that, because this person went on to become like 6 or 7 times bigger since then. So,
yeah, there's, you know, I think the thing about the YouTube stuff, the videos, is...
The videos?
I mean, I... Like, it, you, what you said kind of resonated with me with how making... I mean, you know, because it was one of the things that we taught... It was, like, one of the first things we talked about when we actually got around to talking about YouTube stuff.
Yeah.
The first time. Where it was, like, my content was niche, but it was still broad because, you know, the travel niche was still very broad.
Yeah.
And so I suddenly found myself having people who only liked specific types of videos and not the rest of my videos. And so my channel just underperforms, and, you know, people subscribe for specific videos, but it's like, of course I don't want to make that specific video for the rest of my life.
Yep.
So it's kind of like I feel like when creating a channel, it has to be something that's so, like, the travel thing I thought was specific, but it wasn't specific enough. And so, like, long term, and that's kind of where, you know, YouTube kind of, I feel like I get shot in the foot, and it's just kind of, and the reason why I feel the need to make different channels, because of the fact that I do want to make different things. And unfortunately, if I don't have specific channels that are for these niches, then people, it won't reach people.
I think that the way that I, there is one way that I'm aware of to not have variety content die on YouTube. And the way that it would have to work is that the individual titles of the videos have to like pretty much practically be absolutely clickbait, but you basically have to build yourself a show that can be anything, but the show has to have kind of at least a format and a structure and a setup. And you can put anything into that episode today, because that the whole point is, this is my favorite show and I wonder what's going to happen today. You get what I'm saying? And that's part of why people become vloggers. The other way you can do variety is you have to brand as a lifestyle that accommodates the variety of content you want to do. Like if you make a channel while you're in college about the college experience, you can make almost anything and a variety of content because people are signing on to see your life as a college student. You could argue that this is the sitcom format. The sitcom format lends itself to variety because, oh, this episode is the musical episode. This episode is the after school special episode. This episode is that, you see what I'm saying? There's a variety that can be had. Now you might have outliers, but those could be special videos and so on and so forth. But the individual videos would have to themselves just be the best idea topically that they can be independent of each other. Another way that people do it is they just make, they make variety videos, but they make variety videos under the guise of they just make viral content.
Right. And I think like one of the things is like Metal for Breakfast mentioned in the chat saying making myself the niche. And
no, Gary Vee says that not everybody can actually do that. Like, it's well-intentioned advice, but it's like, it's for people who aren't mediocre at things.
And also maybe have some kind of following already from something else, you know?
And, or you have to like, and when I say don't mean mediocre at things, like, you know, who can make themselves the niche? Jake and Logan Paul can do that because they have no sense of consequences. They have an absurd risk tolerance to where they'll do anything for views. So if you'll do anything for views, you can make yourself the niche. If you have no shame. Kelly Stamps. Kelly Stamps can do that because Kelly Stamps can play a character.
She's also very unique.
That's what I'm getting at. She can play a character. She's even said unique that she's
in
a
the,
character.
Unique in the sense that there's not a lot of girls like her with her interests doing what she does.
Yes. On and YouTube. She also became known for something in the fact you can become the niche if you become known for your personality and for your antics, because you're not I'll watch anything Kelly Stamps does because I'm watching her as an entertainer. In the same way I'll watch anything Sarah Silverman does because I'm watching her as an entertainer, because what she's known for is her capacity as an entertainer. I'll watch Robin Williams in anything because of his capacity for an entertainer, because it's Robin Williams. But you would have to have such an over the top personality, or such a distinct personality, or such a strong personality. You cannot be generic. You cannot be in the middle. You cannot be someone who can fade into the background. You cannot be mediocre.
Right.
You can't be just okay at stuff.
Or the way that you look as well.
Yeah. Or you have to, you have to have some standout thing. You have to be like, it's like, I mean, like in Cobra Kai and everything like that, it's like Eli was just the kid with the lip that got picked on and was scrawny until he decided to become a hawk and become a badass. Oh, he's the guy with the mohawk. Oh, he's the guy with the tattoos. Oh, he's the guy who did that kickflip on that one dude and broke his jaw. You have to create a story about yourself. You have to create
there
a story about
yourself.
There
has to be something extra there. Because I feel like, because I tried to do that, right? Yeah. Because, like, yeah, I wanted to do the travel thing, but I didn't want to start a travel show. Like, my thing isn't called traveling the globe. It's called Red Romina, right? Because essentially it was supposed to be about me and my experiences and showing people the world. Like, that was just what was supposed to happen. But I did fall into the trap of making certain videos for search engines that were search engine friendly. Because of that, I got a lot of views and I got a lot of traffic and a lot of subscribers, but they were there for the information. They weren't there for me.
And there's a such thing as also an evolution of your channel. And there's a thing of, like, you'd have to, all right, so here's something specific I can talk about: growth versus churn. Because what you experienced is when you move on, you end up churning a certain amount of your audience. But if you don't do that while you're also outgrowing and outpacing from new content, because you have to parallel introducing something new without taking away the old thing until your growth would outrun your churn.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Wait, churn and growth, what?
Okay, so these are businessy terms, and see, this is why I am Roberto Blake.
I kind of know, but I want to make sure that I'm not.
Okay, so if you have an audience that signed on for, all right, let's take me. I had 80,000 subscribers that signed on for graphic design content that I don't make anymore, but I didn't completely 100% abandon all 80,000 of those people per se, because there was other content that I was doing simultaneously that graphic design people may watch. However, those people, even if I kept making graphic design content, there's a chance that they may decide after they graduate from college to not become graphic designers, and they may not care about that content anymore. They may naturally churn out and leave that and leave me behind because they left the profession behind. Same thing with YouTube tips. As long as you want to be a YouTuber, you could watch my YouTube tips content. But if you decide that you give up on YouTube and it's not working, then guess what? I lost you through no fault of my content. I lost you because we no longer have it in common. We no longer have that in common. You see, but someone like, and the reason Gary Vee is Gary Vee is because you might have come to Gary Vee because he's a social media pundit. It's more likely these days, though, you came to him because of the motivational content he makes and because you're looking for someone to kind of push you to get your life together. So it depends on your motive for something. Gary always had the motivational component in him, but he resisted it. He didn't blow up until he embraced it and realized that, oh, I can help people. He's like, he thought he wanted to help people build businesses. Then he realized he wanted to help people become happy. And he realized that he had truths that he learned through proxy of everything he built that would allow people to be happy by pursuing something they genuinely are passionate and ambitious about. So he evolved, because Gary Vee today is not Gary Vee of when I signed on for the Ask Gary Vee show. But the thing is, I will still watch him, but not everything. He hasn't completely churned me out of his audience, but he churned a lot of people that did come up with him from, you know, the old days out of his audience when he focused more on businessy stuff. Because he's not providing the same value for a lot of those people, but he provides disproportionate value for so many more new people who are discovering him that he doesn't need the core audience he started with then, because he has a completely new crop of people now. So you see, as long as there's some, but the thing is, he could still keep some of that audience in the meantime and not have to start over, because the universality of motivation, because even if you're successful and you are quote unquote crushing it, that doesn't necessarily mean that you might always feel like you are crushing it, and you might want Gary to give you a pep talk instead of a business strategy. I might not need a business strategy from Gary anymore, but I might need perspective, or I might need to remember some lesson about humility and accepting the things I can't change in the world. You see, like, so you have to have something that is some scale to it in your brand. And when you don't have that, you are vulnerable to the relevancy of the niche or the relevancy of your own style if there's not something universally appealing about what you're making that would reach a more general audience. And so if you niche down too far, but not without having a compelling element of what you do, or an entertaining element, or a valuable element education-wise. You need something that either would make you an aspirational figure of, I don't want to do what you do, but I want what you have. Mm-hmm. Or you would need, oh, I don't want to do what you do, or I'm not interested in the topic, but I'm interested in you because you're just so funny or so entertaining. Or, oh, like, I don't do that, but you're so intelligent or well-spoken, or you're so informative that I may not think I care about that topic, but I won't dismiss the idea that if you think it's useful, then it might help me. So you see, you have to have enough value in one of these three categories, or in Gary's case, all of these three categories, or in Casey's case, all of these three categories, to be able to have longevity and to outpace or outrun people quitting the thing or quitting you.
That's cool. I hadn't thought about, I feel like I just hadn't talked about that before out loud.
Yeah. And so let me ask you guys this.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, well, I know, Roberto, you have stuff to say about it, but also Audrey might have something to say about it as well from a different perspective as a consumer.
Excited.
So let's say I were to want to start a daily vlog in 2021. I had to check what year we were in because it seems like 2020 is eternal.
Don't jinx it.
So 2021, right? January 1st, first daily vlog.
What
would you recommend? Because how do you stand out? Part of like what makes, you know, daily vlogging interesting is the daily stuff. It's not so much like, oh, hey, I went to the grocery store and this and that. It's like a lot of, you know, you look at like David Dobrik's stuff, and it's very much like Friends, right? It's just like hanging out, like random snippets of these people's lives. And Casey also did that kind of as well. He had more of like a story arc though in his videos, but it was still they were snippets of like a few seconds here and there of what he did in his life. So what do you guys feel like would make standout content from a daily vlog?
I'm not convinced that David Dobrik's vlogs would have been successful if he was poor.
Right. So that's what I'm saying.
A poor man's David Dobrik working with like, I think that would be impossible in today's climate, because someone will say, oh, well, so-and-so did it. And I was like, that was then, this is now. You have a different culture now.
Well, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. What if they took like the Mr. Beast approach? That probably couldn't be possible.
Mr. Beast didn't blow up like until he went to an extreme of doing stuff that nobody would do. Like anyone could read the dictionary in one setting. Anyone could count to 100,000. No one will torture themselves like that.
Yeah.
He's more disciplined. True. No one will outwork Mr. Beast. So saying, oh, why don't we do this? They'll only copy him. They won't outwork him because they won't be as innovative, and they won't think of a clever way to torture themselves. And the thing is, and if they, at this point, if they did it, everyone would just say that they're copying him. And even if they did, it's not sustainable. That kid in the Middle East who got like 3 million views for staring into space for like 3 hours and everything like that, all of his views are trash now. He tries to make viral content. He keeps doing that, but he has no sustainability. And if he were in the U.S., it might be different because the ad rates would make it worthwhile. But the ad rates over there are so god-awful that it's not good enough money to then generate making quality content after that. And the thing is, that content's spectacle. There's no value to it.
Yeah.
Mr. Beast went and made viral content that may or may not have had any true entertainment value to game the algorithm. But immediately after any benefit and money came from that, he went and made the best viewer experience of what would be worth watching versus, oh, I'll just get you to watch this out of curiosity to see if I faked it. He went and made stuff that would actually be worth watching without needing to be curious if he faked it.
So what you're saying is, if someone were to do a daily video, a daily vlog, they would have to provide value.
The best entertainment value. All right, here's the thing. Casey Neistat's videos, even with the production value, Casey Neistat's videos as vlogs are only interesting because of his lifestyle. And now, even though the lifestyle that he has in his current vlogging format is not extravagant per se, it's because he's a celebrity doing normal things now and raising a family. And also he's an age that some of his audience has now matured and is now actually trying to be thoughtful or is looking at one day in the near future, I will be as old as Casey, or I have kids now. So now I relate to Casey more watching him be a dad because I may have grew up watching him, but now I'm a dad. So now I am more interested in this, or you see what I'm saying? So like, people watch Casey Neistat at this point because he's a celebrity. They watched him originally when for 5 years grow to 500,000 because he was a filmmaker telling stories. Then he went and he brought daily vlogging, and now it was curious because, wow, the production value of this daily vlog, and can he sustain? Part of it was, can he really make something that looks this good every day? And is he really doing it by himself? So there was some of that. And then it's like, okay, this is actually really cool, and you got to check this out. But he was giving you access to the lifestyle and the adventures of a person with a lot of disposable income. If he were daily, like, think about all the New York daily vloggers. Aside from the challenge of trying to live cheap, which made Brett Conti's stuff like super, super interesting, which is like, all right, but you can't be that cheap and by vlogging and doing stuff. And like, it took Brett a long time to actually grow and to kind of blow up a little bit. It took him a long time doing it in New York as a New York vlogger. You need access to a location and a lifestyle. And New York is interesting enough to have things happen to where you may not need money to make New York interesting. Sarah, Eric Conover, John Hill, Brett Conti, Sam Sheffer, Casey, the access to interesting places, interesting items, interesting people, and an enviable lifestyle in a place that most people try to get to their entire lives was the formula for their success. So I'm not convinced that unless you live in a really cool place like Japan or LA or something like that, that there is a lifestyle or adventure. Think Seattle, Shelby Church, Seattle, California. Like, there's a Graham Stephan blew up because you got to see basically almost every day the actual thoughts and minds of the person that they basically write the millionaire next door about. There needs to be a compelling storyline for us to tune into our favorite show every day. There needs to be a compelling storyline. And the reality is we rarely, outside of certain sitcoms, I mean, it's not even popular in sitcom culture anymore to make stories about poor people or people of average incomes anymore. Everything is about an enviable lifestyle now. There's no, you get what I'm saying? I'm not convinced, and some people could prove me wrong. I'm not convinced, and Metal, I am aware Jimmy was giving value in the beginning, talking about how much other YouTubers made and stuff. That was search engine, and he like gets something off of the back of that. That was kind of the stuff that got him to a certain level to where he would have viral potential later. And he was catering to an audience of people like him, kids who are obsessed with YouTubes, which is all kids, especially now. But which is also where the even collabing with big YouTubers works for him now. But like, from a daily vlogging, and I'm not trying to discourage you from daily vlogging, I'm saying the lifestyle has to be worth watching and worth envying to cultivate and captivate an audience at scale. And the advantage of every successful daily vlogger today that's not like a college kid, because that works because, oh, there's a reason to do that, either nostalgia or attractiveness, or you're also a college kid, or you will be one day. The audience on that skews younger or just above. Like, it's everyone younger than them or just above, because college is kind of like a theoretical, inevitable milestone. Same thing with family vloggers. It's that, oh, people hope to have a family, want to have a family, or do have a family, mm-hmm. or did have a family. Like, you know what I'm saying? So,
right.
So, Romeo, but the answer is then, for what you would do if you started, you would have to move to somewhere really cool, probably.
You're trying to get her to come to LA.
No. But like in the chat, people were talking about Tokyo. That I would probably watch that. If someone was like daily vlogging in Tokyo, I'd be like, yes, that sounds awesome.
Well, I bet there already are people.
I know.
Oh, it works. It gets views. It gets views.
All right. So basically I have to travel back in time to my prime and go somewhere really cool and exotic.
Yeah. And live there.
And have just a lot of friends and do cool things.
Yeah.
Is this what you're telling me?
Yep.
Is this
contradict me. Offer me an example of the alternative.
I don't have one. This is why I asked the question. I thought it would be an interesting one to ask because everything that you said is stuff that I think about, as far as like, for example, like David Dobrik, like obviously like his content is only entertaining because you already know who he is and because of his friends and the lifestyle and the stuff that he's got going for him.
Yeah.
But it's like, unless you're already starting that now and you're already friends with those people, it's like
famous people doing famous people things, rich people doing rich people things. Like Graham Stephan's personal finance advice, without being able to say real millionaire in it, probably would not be as successful as it is today.
True.
Right.
How did he get started? I don't know much about.
How did he get started? He didn't think he could do YouTube. He actually wanted to invest and buy, be an investor in a YouTube channel because he loved YouTube. He grew up watching YouTube, but he didn't think he had the personality to do it. And then he just said, screw it one day and said, I'm going to do it. And I'm going to tell people stuff that they really want to hear. But at first he didn't start really there. He started by trying to bait them a little bit. He started a little bit with the bait of a Tai Lopez, because it's like, well, people, I want to give people real advice, but they do care about cars and stuff like that. So he started by showing off his expensive car, which was a Lotus Elise and stuff like that, but then would talk about real estate and make how-to videos. He started awkwardly enough. And the thing is, there was nothing wrong with the content, to be honest, and there was nothing wrong with the strategy. But eventually he got to his like, you know what? This is not really who I am. I'm trying to get people by doing this and like by, you know, almost tricking them into dangling this thing in front of them and then hoping they'll like the real me. And it's like, that's just so. And then he said, screw it again, and just was really more himself. And he grew because of that.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, guys, in the audience, because I see some comments there, this question was specifically for daily vloggers. So by all means, you don't need to live in Tokyo to have a success.
No, this is like, look, YouTube advice is a grain of salt thing, is contextual. It's not like personal finance, which literally like most of that applies to 99% of people and is not, you need it to be specific to you. No, YouTube is, there is some YouTube advice that's universal, but that's the bread and butter stuff that me and Nick Nimmin and all of us put out and everything like that. But it's like, take the rest of this with a grain of salt, because I'm having a conversation with my homie. I'm not trying to give y'all advice. I'm talking things out with my homie, and like the daily
thing. Yeah, I mean, this is obviously like a hypothetical situation, because it's like, it's something that I do think about, because I do, I like reverse engineering things, even things that I'm not going to be partaking in, you know. I like looking into things and kind of figuring out the science behind
it. Why daily?
Because that's the challenge, right? Because I mean, if you're gonna start like a channel, you know, where you're hammering stuff and you're just like, you destroy things with a hammer and that's your whole channel, it's like, it's like it's self-explanatory, right? But it's like daily vlogging, why, like what would make a daily vlog pop in 2021?
Casey did it by making absurdly high stand. He raised the standard of, because you used to be able to daily vlog on your phone. There's post Casey, there's almost no point in it. Like, Casey changed what vlogging is. Technically, what I used to do is vlogging, and what I still do is technically vlogging. What I do is what the vlog brothers used to define what vlogging was, which was sit down, talk to your camera, locked off on a tripod, express your feelings and your thoughts or what you're interested in today. And that was a vlog because it was a video version of what a blog is.
And
Casey Neistat, Casey Neistat turned vlogging on its head and redefined it. And I'm not accusing of it or not, no shade and everything like that. And I love Casey, but Casey Neistat changed what used to be able to be done on a phone or a webcam's standard because of how many views it gets. Because what happens in YouTube is a couple of people on the platform get to define what the platform is or get to define the genre of a platform. PewDiePie ultimately defined at one point what gaming YouTube is. Casey Neistat defined and got to define what vlogging is. Marquez got to define what tech YouTube is. Lou got to define what unboxing videos are and can be. Rosanna Pansino got to define what cooking videos on YouTube can and will and should be. Lindsay Sterling got to define what music videos are for indie artists as a whole. And Freddie Wong, for a very long period of time, got to define what VFX was. He got to set the bar and the standard for VFX content on YouTube.
So let me ask you this, because you're all like, you know, after Casey, post Casey, there's no phone vlogs, right? You're saying this, right?
Not as an absolute.
Let's get into this tech. The iPhone 12 Pro. They gotta be. I mean, you could make something more cinematic with an iPhone, but you have to make it look higher. Like, you'd have to properly film it so that it would be
one. That would be part of your gimmick. Because here's the thing. You'd have to have a different gimmick. Because you know who made, until just literally this last month, you know who made all their viral content on an iPhone, a high end iPhone?
Audrey.
Janelle. Janelle Liliana.
Well, she doesn't also, like, her vlogs are still not, I actually haven't watched much of her content, so she probably shouldn't be talking, but from the one that I did, it was more like sit-down-y chat.
Yeah, it was like sit-down.
No, they're long enough to where sometimes they're that, but, like, there's actually a lot that goes on, because guess what? Casey's videos are 80% of him sitting down talking to the camera. No one notices, especially the older. If you go back and you watch anything before Casey moved to California, 80% of the video is Casey in his office talking directly to camera. Peter's the same way. It is literally only 10 to 20% of cinematic content, and literally 80%. No one understood that parlor trick. No one understood. No one measured it. I timed it. It is literally, if you watch a video of theirs that is 10 minutes long, 8 of it is stationary, locked off, them talking directly to camera.
I timed it because
I'm the only one obsessed with YouTube like that, aside from like Mr. Beast or somebody. But I say all that to say this, though. Janelle may have made videos on her iPhone, but she also spent $10,000 to buy a van and another $10,000 to trick it out. That's an advantage.
That's the whole lifestyle thing.
That's the lifestyle. So not Tokyo, but
she's bought a van.
It's different. Again, she has the same thing that Kelly's got going for her, which is she is doing something that females are currently not doing in that space. And so she's very unique. She's basically like a cartoon character. Like, she's not real, even though there's plenty of people like her offline.
But aspirational, meaning that, like, you would want to, it's like, it's a desirable lifestyle. It's an enviable lifestyle. It's a, you have to be somebody the audience would want to swap places with. You can't be somebody in the audience. They would have to want to switch places with you. Even Mr. Beast, after the torturing himself content, essentially a lot of that would be, you'd want to be, because everyone wants to be in that game show Everyone wants to be a contestant on Mr. Beast's thing.
So now that we're talking about Mr. Beast again, I'm going to bring this around before we wrap the show. Audrey, do you have any tips for someone who might want to collaborate with someone bigger?
Don't force it, I think is like the number one, like it has to make sense, I think is number one thing. Like for example, for me, like when I made a video a couple years ago about like women creators and stuff, I wasn't thinking about like, oh, I want to reach out to the biggest creators because I want a shout out. It was, I want to reach out to people who like I know probably also care about this topic and would probably want to talk about it. So for me, that was the value exchange, I guess. It was like, we're both passionate about something, want to talk about it. And I was giving them an outlet, I guess, is like one way you could put it. So I guess just not forcing it, like it made sense to do that. And it was a, it was like a mutual, like fun thing to do. And also earlier when we were talking about like, when is it too early or too late to start collabing? I don't think so. You can start just like with friends. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't matter how big a channel they have. Just like do it for fun.
As long as you expect to get nothing out of it.
Yeah.
If you want to collab, collab with people and expect absolutely to get zero. Expect like if you're worried,
you shouldn't be doing it because then you're just worried.
All right,
about
I'll put to you like this. It's okay to do a collab at any time in your YouTube career as long as you're okay with 100 people unsubscribing from you.
Yeah.
Over that collab specifically. If you are willing to, if you want to do a collab and you want to have fun and you want, if you are not okay making what you want to make with the consequences being that every time you hit upload, you lose 100 subscribers and you start to have to dig out of that hole, then question everything if you're not okay with that being the outcome of making what you want.
What if they only have 30 subscribers?
Be willing to lose every single one of them over
that. I think the biggest thing that's like a red flag to me is it just has to make sense. Like I think trying to force collabs is the worst thing you could do because you're burning a bridge before you've even done anything. So just if you're like reaching out to someone who has a bigger audience than you, make sure that you have something to back it up, or honestly, you should be trying to establish some sort of, like, I don't even want to say trying, like, it should just naturally happen, where you kind of establish a connection, somehow, like, online or whatever, through a friend or something. And it won't be, like, as big of a difficult question, I guess, if the idea is good and it makes sense.
Yeah, my thing is, your intentions are pure if you're willing to do something at a loss.
Yeah,
that's why I'm saying you should be willing. If you have less than 100 subscribers, you should be willing to go down to zero subscribers to do this thing. Because not only should you not, should you be like, oh, I might not get anything out of it, but you know, you're secretly pining and hoping to go viral and all that stuff and anything like that. I want you to be so truly about this that you're willing to lose.
Yeah.
Not only not gain, you should be willing to lose.
Yeah, just like do things that are fun.
I went and I hung out on a live stream. I hung out on a live stream where I knew there was a potential that the audience might literally shit on me or might go to my videos and like dislike them or whatever, because the audience is a little more cynical in nature. And also but I hung out on that live stream for like 3 or 4 hours laughing and hanging out because I wanted to hang out with the two creators and laugh and joke with them and goof off and like, you know, like blow off some steam and like, and it was a fun time and I ended up getting to know them both better and like them better. And I feel like we're going to have like a real genuine like friendship and everything like that. And I largely, unless they brought up something from the chat, I largely ignored the chat because I didn't want the chat to, for the most part, influence the experience that I was having because I came there for those two people. I didn't care, come there for the audience. I came there for the creators.
Right.
I think I came there to get nothing. I came there knowing I could lose some quote unquote clout or that I would have to take some criticism or take some jabs.
I think the biggest thing with collabs is like you should go into it not expecting or not with the intent of like gaining subs or something from the, like you should be doing it because you want to hang out with the people or make something with them. And then whatever happens, happens. It shouldn't, that shouldn't be like a reason as to why you do
Right. I think that kind of brings back when Roberto and I first started hanging out. I think we just started hanging out because we had things in common. Like, we were both huge nerds. We both knew anime stuff, and that was that. Like, it was kind of, and we were both interested in business and things like that. So it was just kind of, we had a lot of common ground. And I think I never asked Roberto for a collab, really, ever.
No, I don't think we did until, like, the three of us were, like, at my WeWork, because you were doing...
Right, it was, like, a WeWork thing.
Well, I think it was a Q&A thing. It was a Q&A thing, where you asked both of us to do something.
Yeah.
Audrey did, like,
Roberto, I did. Yeah. I asked you if you'd be in the female creator video.
Yeah. Yeah, which is... the only reason that I collaborated with Roberto is because I was doing a collab, and then I asked Audrey to be in it. It was like a group video. And then I was like, oh, I might as well ask Roberto because we're all going to his WeWork thing. Mm-hmm. And so we shot like three different videos, I think, that day. Well, you were shooting B-roll, Roberto.
Yeah.
Like B-roll stuff. And then Audrey was shooting, like asking some questions, I think. And I was like, oh, Roberto, let's talk about this thing. And so we did our bit for my video. And then I think that was our first collab together for you and I, Roberto.
Yeah, I think
And then I think with Audrey and I think it just happened naturally because we had been filming stuff. And like, I just happened to show up in Audrey's videos and I freak out over geese. That's pretty much the extent of my cameos in her videos.
That sounds like an amazing cameo.
What, you making fun of me because I have a genuine fear of our avian excuse
our
me
avian menace
yeah our avian menaces
mm.
They have sharp
sounds
teeth.
Like great content. You know, okay, I was having this argument with my friends the other day, but we won't get into it. Chickens and, like, birds, I don't understand how they're scary.
What, they're in sheer numbers.
They are the descendants of dinosaurs.
So watch Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds.
Yeah, all you have to do is watch The Birds, and you will understand.
Okay.
I promise.
I have seen that. No, I saw that at film school. Isn't it in black and white?
No.
No.
Oh, never mind.
What it's did you one of the only Alfred Hitchcock ones in color.
And it's the best one.
Is that the one where they're all on the fence?
No.
And they're like, oh God, which one am I thinking?
Alfred Hitchcock was kind of a dick, though.
We can say that.
Still a great filmmaker.
Oh, never mind. It is this one. For some reason, I guess I thought it was black and white.
Because it's old.
Yeah.
That's ageist, Audrey. Is Roberto black and white? I don't think so.
No, here's the fence I was talking about.
He's purple and gray.
I'm copying it into the chat.
Oh my goodness. But the point is, if you want to collaborate with someone and you're a little intimidated by their clout, if you will, just be friends with them first and don't expect to collaborate with them. Don't make it about the collaboration. If you want to collaborate with them, make sure that it's because you actually just want to be friends with them. It's because you find stuff in common with them. Because there is some kind of value for both of you.
I passed on a huge collab that probably would have blown up my channel that everyone would have loved to see in order to keep my word to somebody else. Because everybody else bailed on this thing that they said they would do in order to do the big collab. And this was like in 2018, I want to say.
Mm. Oh my gosh, Audrey.
I'll tell a little bit of the story. A big YouTuber that I won't name that everybody would know if I named them did a massive collab that brought a lot of people together. Around the holidays, and I passed on that collab. I passed on that collab.
I'm not going to say anything.
I passed on that collab to go to YouTube headquarters and to advocate for creators and to tell YouTube about what creators are experiencing and to offer solutions to make things better on the platform for creators, while everybody called at the time, I think, was calling me a YouTube apologist and a YouTube shill, like they love to do sometimes. And, oh, you always defend the platform. I literally went to YouTube HQ and literally made YouTube employees when I was done giving my talk, which like I basically gave a TED talk to YouTube employees. I had people in that freaking auditorium in tears, crying. I'm not even exaggerating, crying. I had people say YouTube doesn't care. This is why I get mad and I defend the platform, is people say YouTube doesn't care. I literally sat there and watched YouTube employees cry about what I told them. And I passed on the biggest collab that of my career to go do that, because I promised that I would do that before the opportunity for the collab came up. And I decided that creators were more important and keeping my word was more important than clout. And the thing is, there were a lot of other people that backed out of the opportunity to go tell YouTube what the creator experience was when they were asking for feedback. You know, oh, YouTube doesn't listen to us. YouTube made an offer to a dozen creators to actually hear them out. And a lot of people backed out to go do the collab. It was me and one other creator that showed up and told and talked to YouTube and kept our word on that.
Sometimes you gotta make these sacrifices. You just gotta know where you stand. And yeah, don't force it. Also, don't ask like 1,000 times.
Yeah, and don't. Here's another tip. I will keep names out of this, but I have a friend who, when he was a smaller channel, reached out to a big channel, and then like tried to use his like get his followers to message this larger creator to get them to collab or like think about collabing with them. And it backfired big time because the big creator's like, stop doing this. Stop like trying to like, I don't know, put this
engineer.
Yeah. And I'm like, see, that like you learned your lesson the hard way on that one, because now
they've like, seen other people do it successfully and then decided that that's okay.
Here's the thing. I feel like there's a way to do it to be continuously in someone's radar. Viper does a really great job of it, where he does keep asking.
Yeah,
but
see, that
Viper
would be-
has a person. Yeah. Viper is special. You can't duplicate Viper. Viper will. Viper's a rare and special person, and you can't.
We can if we figure out cloning.
No one can replicate Viper's. No.
It's all right, Roberto, let me ask you a question. All right, we might have to save this for the next episode, but do you think that cloning would also include your personality?
Oh my goodness.
No.
No, dude. What type of question was that?
No, it's simple. Your personality your personality is dictated by your lived experiences. So unless you're also in a large part of it, a majority of it, if that's, and so unless you also transfer those memories, then I would argue no, aside from some minor carryovers of what could be called genetic memory. Primary example, even with the body and the skill set and all of that, there was a version of Bruce Wayne that lost all of his traumatic memories, and therefore he couldn't be Batman, and he literally had to have a machine implant all of his memories back into him, and he had to re-experience all the trauma of losing his parents in order to be able to do Batman things again. So
we're talking about Batman now?
The point is that the point that I'm making is, I literally you've seen things where like people lose their memory, they go into a coma, and they come out different people because they don't have those experiences. You know, and people even with who dissociate, sometimes they're different people because, again, the other the other identity had a different lived experience and then presents differently. So we see it. We literally have evidence of that. So that's why I believe that. To an earlier point, though, in general, like, look, like asking like how to get somebody to collab with you is, it basically comes down to you would have to become friends with somebody. And the thing is, there is somewhat of a barrier to entry. And I'm sorry, if you're a small creator and you dream of collabing with somebody who's big or is famous, a lot of the problem is, the reality is that aside from the fact that you share a platform, the odds are you probably have nothing else that significant in common versus people they already know. And the thing is, you don't have the ability to maintain an unlimited amount of relationships authentically. Because you don't have unlimited time, energy, and mental capacity. So the thing is, people are going to be selective, and they should be, because they would be deprioritizing someone or something else. And you might notice that creators who have families don't collab as much as people who don't. People, creators who have significant others don't collab as much as ones who don't. And there's a reason for that. And so the fact that you might desire a collab has nothing to do with the experiences that they want to have, unless it does. And so that's another part of those healthy boundaries. And it might feel sad or disappointing for you to think that I'm killing your dreams or saying, oh, you will never do this or you'll never do that. But the reality is, primary example, I wouldn't have the expectation, aside from the fact that through mutual friends or mutual interest, I wouldn't have the expectation that I could do XYZ with people if I weren't at the threshold of where I am in other areas. Not only my YouTube quote unquote subscriber count or the clout from that, but if I wasn't who I was in the industry as an industry insider, that's another different level of relationship. Or if I didn't have value to offer creators even bigger than me with regard to business, I get hired by creators bigger than me because there's something that I have a value from a business perspective to offer them. They don't necessarily need me to help them get more subscribers. They need me to help them with something in their lifestyle as a creator or their business as a creator. And therefore, but again, if I hadn't established a reputation that merits that, or a level of awareness to be on their radar, that relationship wouldn't happen either from a business standpoint. So the thing is, there has to be a reason why someone would say yes to you. And you can't expect that reason is just because it would be good for you. And that's what most people won't admit, is that they won't admit that they stand the most to gain from that relationship, and that's why they want it. It's not equity. And the thing is, until you raise your value, then you can't offer equity. And if you can't offer equity, then you'd have to reconcile that you're being selfish.
Well, I'm going to be selfish and say that it's time to wrap up this episode.
That was a good point to end on.
I think it was great. I don't have anything else to add to this topic.
It's been an hour and a half.
Yeah. So if you're ready, Roberto, with an outro in a couple minutes.
I think I do have an outro right now.
Ooh. Oh, wow. Okay. Mr. Outro ready.
All right. Thank you for listening to the No Assembly Required podcast, a podcast where we talk about nothing and clickbait you with the promise of Mr. Beast. Please tune in next week when we will talk about some other topic that we have yet to figure out. And, of course, remember that this podcast happens at 8 p.m. on Thursdays Eastern Standard Time. And this has been your trio of hosts. You will leave us a review, won't you, over on Apple. You can't do it on Spotify because they won't update their app and do their damn jobs. Well, this is us signing off as your trio of hosts, starting with Audrey Tellamy's Fired Ember, the Wizarding World of Romina, and of course, your favorite Dark Lord of the Interwebs, crusher of dreams, Roberto Blake. Thank you for tuning in to the No Assembly Required podcast, filmed in front of a live YouTube audience. No audience members were harmed in the filming of this podcast, only their dreams of collaborations and clout. Thank you so much. We'll catch you next week. Nope.